Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 12, Walking for Water.
Golden Spiral Media presents The Walking Dead Talk Through. The Walking Dead Talk Through is a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the action, peril, and drama that are unleashed as Rick Grimes, Daryl Dixon, and the rest of the group fight to survive. Send in your thoughts about each episode at 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Hey, survivors, welcome back to another episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Brian.
And we are here to talk about the Season 5, Episode 10 episode of The Walking Dead called Them.
And Them is written by Heather Belson and directed by Julius Ramsey. And before we go too much further, my voice is a little shaky tonight, so I've been sick the last few days. But anyway, going into ratings, I was a little disappointed when I looked at the ratings this week. And they don't have the full ratings out. Usually they have Sunday night ratings out by Tuesday. But they're slowed down because it was President's Day yesterday. But there was a separate report saying that the ratings were down 22% from last week, which I did some checking, and those were the worst ratings of the season. And the second episode in a row where the ratings from season four at the same period in the season were higher. So the total was 6.2 in the 18 to 49 and 12.3 million viewers. Now compare this against the season 4 episode 10, which was a 6.8 and 13.3 million. So we'll have a link to that. One reason was that, and I was actually surprised that the ratings for this were so good, but on NBC, they had an SNL 40th anniversary special, and that got a 7.8 with 23.14 million. So it did pretty well, but, not against SNL. So, one thing I did find, though, is what happened and what's going on did get number one for Xfinity, which is Comcast's on-demand service. So Xfinity on-demand, top 20, they were number one. So my thought was, have the ratings for The Walking Dead peaked? What do you think?
No, I don't think they peaked. I just think last week's episode wasn't that great. Because if you listen to The Devil You Know, Constantine podcast, according to Tony and Joe, the ratings reflect the previous week's episode. So this week didn't do so well because that many people wanted to not watch after watching last week. And to me, that kind of makes sense. Like, I was kind of turned off by this one episode, so I'm not going to watch the next episode. And I think that could be true for the casual viewer, but maybe not the hardcore fan like probably most of us are.
Yeah, well, we all know what you thought of last week's episode. So it definitely supports that, but it was a very polarizing episode. So certainly, if that was true across the board, and certainly you know, it'll, we'll see. But I guess you can't tell from one episode. You have to tell by a trend. So if ratings go up and they get above season four, we'll know that it was just a little blip. And if not, then maybe ratings have peaked. We'll see. In other news, just a couple other things, and this is where I try to elicit some pity. I'll be missing Scott Wilson and Seth Gilliam, as well as various other guests like Shatner and Bruce Campbell at Wizard World Comic Con in my current hometown of Cleveland. But those are two guests from The Walking Dead that aren't at the Walker Stalker Con in Chicago, which is also going on this week. So, and that has a ton of Walking Dead guests. So if you haven't decided to attend them, and you know, then we have links. So now for our ratings for this week. So Ruthie, what did you think of them?
I really liked it. After watching it a second time, I liked it more than I did the first time. It really, I don't know, it really, I guess, seemed very poignant as far as, you know, episodes of a TV show about zombies can be. So I gave it 9 out of 10 tree skewered walkers.
Nice. You'll just notice if you checked our show notes that I just changed my rating, and I'll explain that. First time I gave it a 9. Second time I gave it an 8.5. And then I started thinking, why did I give it an 8.5? And I thought to myself, it's so depressing. But I watched it a third time, and I give it 9 out of 10 bad road trips. So we finally see the group at their bottom. All right. So we have awesome sauce. So I guess I'll get started. First of all, I don't know why, but I love the scene of the group walking like walkers, and we see in the background walkers. So it was just something about the way they were walking, and how I think almost the entire group, I don't know if Daryl and Carol were in that group at the time, but most of the group was there, and they were just all walking very slowly. So I like that. So I also have for the awesome sauce, I don't know how much we want to get into detail about this, because there is a lot of things to talk about here, but the bridge scene.
Okay.
So, first of all, in terms of the group before Sasha kind of screwed it up for everybody, I love the ingenuity of it. Like, although it was kind of convenient to find a bridge that just happened to have these massive, you know, caverns to each side that they could throw walkers down that they'd never come back up. I thought it was kind of cool just to use that as a strategy. And it shows that you don't have to kill every walker to take care of them. Like, because of that, drops seem to be pretty steep. You know, it's possible that a lot of those walkers would have been dismembered just by falling. So,
yeah, they could have, you know, taken themselves out. I also really liked the bridge scene. I thought that it was a pretty good idea. I didn't really think it was convenient necessarily. Again, we don't really know how much time has passed. I mean, we know it's been 3 weeks since Atlanta, since they said that outright. But at the same time, Rick said that or Daryl and Rick were talking about the walkers following them. And I think it was Rick that said, we're, you know, we're weak right now. We'll take care of it when we, you know, later. Basically, he just said, we'll take care of it later. And it seems like they probably just came up with this plan when they saw the bridge. Maybe, you know, I don't know that it was necessarily a, to me, it doesn't seem like it was a, let's find a bridge plan. I mean, he did say, let's find, you know, see if we can find a bridge or something like that. But it seemed more like, here's a bridge. Let's use that, to me, I guess. I don't know. And, I liked it also. I mean, I also like the ingenuity of it because it's kind of like, I think it's jujitsu or judo or one of the Jew something martial arts. I don't know, that where you use your opponent's body weight against them, basically, instead of, fighting against them, you just kind of use their momentum to propel them, like just kind of help them along in the path that they were already going, which is basically what they were doing with the walkers. And I think it would have worked brilliantly because I don't know how cognizant the walkers are about, you know, what's going on or whatever, but they were able to kind of do that without alerting the rest of them that, you know, there's danger here or potential danger here or whatever. But to me, it seemed like a really solid plan until.
Until, as Abraham said, the plan just got dicked. And Sasha decided to take matters into her own hands.
Yeah, I think she kind of, to me, she, so as I was watching this episode, I was kind of thinking to myself that, you know, they had focused on these three characters and they are all in the various stages of grief, I think. And Sasha is stuck on the angry stage. She has basically just pitched a tent and has decided she's going to stay there for a little while. And she, I think she just wants to destroy, smash, you know, violence, hit something, kind of just, you know, grr, I've got this aggression and I need to let it out. And so she can't just push the walkers down the steep ravine or whatever. She's got to get out some of that aggression. And, you know, I can't really fault her, having felt like that before in my life. And at least she's taking it out on the walkers instead of other things necessarily. But then on the flip side of that is the fact that those types of feelings make her very careless. And Abraham said basically that she was the problem. She was, you know, the danger to the group, so to speak, and that her behavior was going to be what caused a problem, I guess. I can't remember what he said specifically, but it was something like that.
Yeah. So what else you got?
Well, I really liked when Sasha took out the dogs and Maggie jumped. It was kind of funny. Made me chuckle a little bit because they're all looking at these, what seemed to be ravenous dogs, kind of experiencing a moment of indecision. But Sasha is like, pop, 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 pop. And right when she did that, I guess it, I don't know if it was already showing Maggie or what, but she jumped and I thought it was hilarious. And the first time I watched it, it reminded me of that one scene in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, when they are transporting the hobbits, the group of orcs or orukai or whatever you want to call them, were transporting the hobbits and they're fighting about whether or not they could eat them. And one of the goblins or whatever it is, one of the creatures gets offed, and the head orc orakai thingy guy says, "Meat's back on the menu, boys." And that's exactly how I felt when I saw them take out those dogs. I thought, "Oh, meat's back on the menu."
Yeah, so I have this in my notes in a different spot, but it's worth talking about right now. What did you think about the whole shooting of the dogs? Like, other than, you know, like in terms of living in this reality and having dogs killed, I mean, a lot of people kind of equate it to, you know, eating your children, I guess.
Well, there are some countries and some countries with way larger populations than the U.S. where eating dogs is acceptable. And
I'm looking at you, China.
That's right. I guess I have to look at another show that I watched that recently had something similar happen, and that is 12 Monkeys, where the two main characters were faced kind of, I guess they just kind of stumbled across this dog, or this dog stumbled across them, and one of them was gonna, you know, had his gun up and was gonna shoot the dog, and the other one was like, "Shoot him, shoot him, shoot him." And the one decided that he couldn't do it. Well, this is not, I don't think this is even last week's episode. I think it's the week before that. I can't remember.
I know, but I'm behind.
Well,
I'm kidding.
I'm sorry. It sucks to be you.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then the other guy, or the guy who has the gun, says, "I can't do it. You do it." And so then the other guy raises his weapon, and the next scene, you cut to they're eating, but it's not the dog. And I think the difference between this is that dog was sort of coming to them as a supplicant, basically, you know, "Please take care of me. I'm sad and helpless and I can't take care of myself," kind of, you know, with the whimpering and all that stuff. But these dogs were clearly aggressive, and they approached with nothing but ill intentions, and I do not think that those dogs ever could have been convinced to be friendly towards our gang. So I feel like there was no alternative than to basically take them out. And as we know from just, I don't know, watching the show, there are more threats than just walkers, and apparently there are more threats than just humans. And it's true, their dogs can be quite vicious and can be quite scary, especially if they are coming at you aggressively with their teeth bared and snarling. So, and I think at this point in time, if you're hungry and you had to put an animal down and it's not tainted meat, you should eat it.
And if they're going to attack you anyway.
Right. I mean, at this point in time, I guess I would be I would have the mindset of, you know, it's me or them, and I'm going to pick me every time, or me and mine, you know, every time. And I'm sure it would have been quite different if the dogs had not approached them with the growly, you know, teeth bared. And that kind of, the dogs doing that, I know it's kind of, I'm kind of dwelling on this a lot, but the dogs doing that, to me sort of indicated that maybe they had eaten some people before. And once an animal gets people flesh taste, you can't really have it as a pet. So all you can really do is kind of put it down. And that's what they did.
Well, I'm a dog lover, and I 100% agree with you. I don't think that we need to dwell on it anymore, but I'll have to say it just to conclude it, that I don't think Sasha was a member of the ASPCA. It's like a humane society.
Well, I like dogs too, but I mean, I don't know. And dogs can be great companions, especially in that kind of a world, but clearly that was not ever going to happen.
Yeah.
And cats will eat you too. If you die and no one discovers your body and you have cats, they'll eat you. So
that is a level of hell that I don't ever want to get to.
Well, since I'm probably going to be a crazy old cat lady, I'm probably going to be destined to get eaten by my cats at some point in time.
That's a lovely thought. Okay, what else you got?
Well, I didn't really think this was awesome so much that I just kind of, I don't know, the Abraham character rubs me the wrong way. And him just sitting there boozing it up really sort of brought that home for me, because he is clearly being totally idiotic and he just doesn't care.
Yeah, he's going to enjoy his booze.
Yeah. And die quicker.
Yeah. Seem kind of stupid for my take as well. So I guess that is the end of our awesome sauce moments. Although, like you say, that was more of a getting into the sauce moment. But let's continue our discussion. So like we kind of said, this whole episode is kind of focused upon the three characters that are the most hurting right now. So Sasha, she seems to be taking things the hardest of the three of them. Tyrese, you know, obviously that's the freshest loss. Like Beth, they said it had been 3 weeks since Atlanta. So it seemed like Tyrese maybe happened 3 or 4 days ago. And, you know, she also lost Bob. But then again, Bob and Sasha weren't exactly an item for very long. But anyway, losing Tyrese, you know, her brother, would have meant a lot to her. So first thing I had written down, now in the cold open, she comes across some frogs in a dried out creek, I guess. And I wondered, it's like, okay, they've probably been there a while and maybe they're not too safe to eat, but she never even tried to look at them. And I looked at one frog there in the group and I thought, gee, that frog kind of looks okay.
That's, you know, funny.
So,
well, I think considering the fact that the kind of seems like they're sort of experiencing drought type conditions, it's very hot, I don't think that they would be that good for very long.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I kind of felt like she was sort of, I don't know, it sort of seemed like she saw these little carcasses and she was going to try and bury them. But then Maggie and Daryl were right there.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. You know, I don't know if she was burying them or looking for water, you know, but like with her feet. But I don't know. It was weird.
I got the impression that she wanted to cover them up.
I did too, actually. So, going on, you know, I loved how, I guess this has a continuation of last week, but I loved how Michonne said that after Tyrese lost Karen, it made him stupid, because that's exactly how he was last week. And I'll just seal the episode by saying I watched it again before this one and I still think it's a great episode, but at the same time I'm torn up, very disappointed about Tyrese as a character. You know, he just, I called him a chump and I still call him a chump. So, but anyway, I liked, because she was implying that Tyrese was stupid and Sasha was going to be stupid. And I think by the end, she says to Michonne, Sasha says, "We're not the same and never was." But then Michonne counters with, it's still the same. It just is. Like, basically, stupid is what stupid does. Depending on, it doesn't matter what the reason for being stupid is. Stupid is as stupid does, to quote Forrest Gump.
Yeah, thanks, Forrest. Yeah, she was, I don't know. I mean, Tyrese was kind of telling her the same thing, and she was arguing with him also about how she's not like him, et cetera, et cetera. And I was kind of thinking something along the lines of, methinks the lady doth protest too much, that she doesn't, she probably saw and recognized how Tyrese was acting and that he was being stupid. And so she doesn't want to be that way. But at this point in time, I kind of feel like she can't really help it. She's, you know, I mean, everybody grieves in different ways and everybody handles it differently. And to me, I feel like we're kind of seeing the various stages of grief that are or possibly exist, depending on whether or not you believe that. I guess I was looking at some stuff on the internet, and apparently, to me, it seems like the stages of grief are quite obvious, but apparently there are people who don't really believe in the stages of grief. So I guess it depends on which particular grief philosophy you follow or whatever. But to me, I saw Sasha was stuck in anger. Maggie had reached depression. And Daryl, to me, he was not really sure. And I saw something else that there were like the most commonly thought of stages of grief. There are five of them. And it's denial, anger, bargaining, I think, followed by depression, and then acceptance. But I saw another website that said that there were seven, and they kind of, they added some in, but then they also combined some of these others. But to me, I don't know where you would stick this in, but it felt like to me that Daryl was stuck in guilt.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that there are different, some say five, some say seven. I think I've even seen three, and I think I've seen like a higher number too. But yeah, I tend to think that, you know, no matter how you categorize them, there are stages of grief. I know I've been through them. You know, I've lost my parents, and I know losing them, I went through that, those stages myself, and they're real. I mean, they may not be as textbook as, you know, you see, like, someone could be depressed and angry, you know,
right,
which doesn't show, you know, the same, because one is stage two and the other is stage four. But, you know, it's just, all of them exist. The stages exist. They may not be as cut and dried, though. But
right.
Yeah, Sasha's definitely angry. And the thing that got to me with this is, you know, going back to the bridge scene, you know, like, she was taking it out on the walkers, like you said, and I can deal with her doing that. Like, if there wasn't any real impending danger, but she was basically, her recklessness was putting into jeopardy everybody else. And, you know, they also had a plan, and she went right against the plan, you know, and negated the plan. And like Rick, he almost got bitten. You know, it was just Daryl sort of coming out of, I don't know where he was, but he wasn't one of the six people. But he came out of nowhere and like literally grabbed the walker by the scalp and scalped him when he got him off of Rick. But you know, Rick could have lost an arm there, and you know, definitely it was pretty tense in there. And the other thing too, and I wondered about this too, like she swung wildly, hit a walker, didn't like take down the walker, and at the same time cut Abraham in the arm. And I wondered to myself, I don't know if you wondered this, did he get infected by that? Like it, cause it went right from, you know, walker and then walker blood right into Abraham and got his blood. I guess he didn't get infected by that, but it was something that I thought of right away.
I didn't really think of him getting infected or anything like that. I just kind of saw the little nick and I thought, oh, well, that sucks. But, well, I think it just kind of goes back to her being reckless. And I personally don't really think that she is... I mean, okay, on the one hand, I understand that everybody is responsible and in control of their own actions and themselves and all that stuff. But on the other hand, you can't really just make that feeling go away. And even if you want to, you can't just, I mean... They're there. You have to deal with them. And I think that maybe that's, I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's probably why nobody really had a worse reaction to the fact that she was going all crazy with the, you know, I got a Hulk smash, whatever stuff thing that she had going on. Because it's not like, I mean, you're in the zombie apocalypse. You can't just go off and find a room and smash everything in it. You've got to have an outlet. And that was her outlet. And it did almost have dire consequences. But then at the same time, what else are you supposed to do? I mean, I understand that she's being reckless and all that stuff. But what's the alternative?
I don't know.
Me neither.
Take it out somewhere else or somehow another way. I don't know.
But in what other way is it not going to endanger her or the group? I feel like she is better off at least being with the group when she's having these feelings of rage and whatnot that she can't avoid or whatever. But
yeah.
I
see your point, and I agree to a certain extent. The only part where I don't is that I couldn't see her jeopardizing the group, because you know it. I mean, if Daryl hadn't shown up at the moment that he did, Rick would have gotten bitten there, and you know, okay, it didn't happen, but still it very well could have happened. And that's where I have a problem with it, not in the emotions, but to me, she could have like jumped down to the ravine there and killed them that way and like took great pleasure in it. I don't know, but
you think no one would have followed her down there though?
No, I think they would have.
So then no matter what she does, she's going to be putting other people in danger by feeling like this. And I don't know. I just.
Yeah. Well, I see your point. But anyway, since we're talking about that, and we just mentioned about her cutting Abraham, I took that whole thing where she says to, or Abraham says to her, "You're with friends." And Sasha says, "We're not friends." I thought to myself, that's pretty cold. And then I thought, it's like, well, if he's not your friend, who is your friend? I don't know. That seemed to be completely out of left field there. What did you think?
So I was watching that scene, I thought to myself, is that just her feelings of rage talking, or does she really feel like that? Or is it because he's got a bottle of whatever it is, what, bourbon or something in his hand, and he's just...
I don't know what it was.
Something. It didn't really look like...
Almost look like Ripple or something.
I don't know. I am not familiar with alcohol at all to have any idea what that could have possibly been. But in any case...
Wild Irish Rose or something, like some cheap bottle of something.
Who knows? But in any case, I mean, I don't know. I would feel... I don't know if this is how she felt, but I would feel that he was being pretty stupid, and I wouldn't... I don't know. I don't have any idea if that's the reason why she said we're not friends, but he is acting stupid, and I don't know. Why do you think she said that they weren't friends?
I don't know. He could have just caught her at a weak moment. Like, there's another outburst that occurs in this episode that we'll talk about in a minute that wasn't her character. And I thought in that instance that was very justified, but this I didn't think was justified. I'm like thinking to myself, look, he definitely is your friend. And, you know, I don't know. I just tend to think that she was just being upset and she'd probably apologize later, but
yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
He just kind of shrugged it off, though, like, well, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he took it well, so. The other...
Maybe he's just too drunk to care.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he thought, you know, you're drunk on your emotions or something. I don't know. But the last thing, and talking about her being pretty cold... And I guess we'll talk about this a little bit later, but when Noah says, you know, he doesn't know if he could survive, and she looks at him, just says, you won't survive. And then a few seconds later says, just eat, which I thought, you know, was kind of like a, you know, forget about that. But the way she said, you won't survive, was very judgmental, I thought. I don't know. It was a very cold moment for her. What did you think?
I definitely did not get judgmental vibe. I got more of a, I don't know. I just kind of got more of an, I just don't give a crap and I'm going to say whatever I'm thinking vibe. Like Noah says, you know, he says, I don't feel like I'm going to survive. And she said, if you think that, then you won't.
Yeah.
And I guess kind of, and, you know, she says later in the episode or at the very end, she says that she tells Maggie that she said that to Noah, but that's pretty much how she feels. And I think that each of these three characters are experiencing this total lack of, I guess, self-preservation moment, kind of. You know, Sasha is, again, she's being reckless and careless. She doesn't really have full handle on the whole connection between actions and consequences kind of a thing. And she, I think, though, on another level, she understands that surviving is, or part of surviving is your attitude and how you face the world. If you're just going to roll over and give up and die, or if you are going to, if you're going to fight to make it. And I think that she is questioning, even though she's stuck on the anger rage thing, she's kind of questioning, you know, what's the what's the point? What's the purpose? I guess we're all just going to die anyway, kind of a thing, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of the impression I got from her. And so she's kind of projecting on Noah how she feels about herself. It's how I thought.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've beaten her down like a whatever. What is the saying? Like a dead horse?
Oh, I was thinking dime store hooker, but probably yours is less misogynistic.
Yeah. Well, let's move on, because another character that was pretty prominent in this episode was Maggie. And I gotta start, you know, she's the first person you see in the cold open. And it's like, what was going on in her head when this walker comes up on her? Like, she seems so nonchalant. I mean, yeah, they've got to be, you know, pretty well-versed at being able to take out walkers. But it all was almost like, oh, yeah, I'm behind this tree that's got extra, you know, protection. And I don't have to worry about him somehow getting me here. So I'm just going to wait until he's real close and gets stuck in the branches, and then I'll get him. it was just so nonchalant. I was kind of surprised about that.
I didn't really get nonchalance. I got more of, to me, this very first opening scene was, I mean, expressed in a few seconds that Maggie is stuck in depression, and she is just, I mean, she's crying her eyes out, and I don't know. I don't usually, if I'm angry, I don't usually cry my eyeballs out. I am angry, but if I'm really, 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 really sad, that's usually when I cry my eyeballs out. And, I feel like she was just experiencing such deep despair that she almost was like, oh, I guess I should take care of this kind of a thing. And she sort of, and again, this displayed to me how she was also experiencing a lack of, personal survival, I guess, or whatever. She just didn't really have the self-preservation instinct. That's what I was thinking of at this moment in time. She's too depressed to really experience a feeling of danger or a feeling of urgency of the need to take care of this immediate threat to her, because even though she's sitting behind this tree and it seems like it can't get directly to her, we still know that it probably could. And I guess maybe it was just convenience, or, you know, the writers didn't want to kill her at the beginning of the show, so they had the walker get stuck in the tree. I didn't really mind it. I just thought that was a perfect way to express her mood and how she's feeling, is that she's very unmotivated, I guess, which is a symptom of depression. She just kind of she doesn't want to drink the water that Glenn is offering her, and she waits till the almost very last minute to kill this walker that's coming after her, and, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm feeling very glum and blah, and so I just can't, you know, motivate myself or whatever.
You know, that was a really good point you made, and I hadn't really thought of it that way, but, you know, I guess that's part of the nice thing about hosting a show with you, because you often make me think. And you know, it kind of fits the way that she was in the cold open, when you take it in the context of what she says to Glenn later in the episode, when she says something like, you know, I don't know if I want to keep fighting anymore. And yeah, under that context, I guess it makes sense. I hadn't thought of it though. So well, good on you.
Yeah, I guess I maybe was a little bit more recently going through the stages of grief. Although I don't think I hit them all. But again, it's not everyone has to go through all of them. And some people go through them very quickly and they go through them out of order.
Yeah. So since we're talking about Maggie and we didn't really have a place to put it, I put in my notes the parts where she interacted with my favorite character on this show, Father Gabriel. So, you know, that guy, I don't know. It's like I can only imagine what kind of priest he was before the apocalypse, because that man, it's like, do you know what to say? Do you know when to say it? It's like, clearly those were stupid things to say to her. And, you know, she really dresses him down in this instance, you know, but I was like, okay, where's he going with the hair shirt? You know, but seriously though, you know, she said to him, like, you know, you didn't know my father, you know, you didn't know Beth. And she clearly reminded him of the fact that she knew what he was all about, that, you know, when his congregation needed him, he turned his back on them. And, you know, she doesn't have much to say good about him. But, and then that she does react, I think, a little bit when she watches him throw his collar in the fire. So anyway,
I missed
that. Stop me from going on a multi-minute rant about my favorite character. What did you think about all that?
Well, I missed her reaction to him throwing in the collar in the fire. I guess maybe I wasn't paying attention both times or something, but I think I sort of gave Father Gabriel the benefit of the doubt a little bit more. I think that he's clearly very awkward. He doesn't really know, what to say to her, because for one thing, he doesn't know her very well either. I mean, he didn't know her sister or father at all, and he doesn't know her very well. And I would like to think that before the zombie apocalypse, clearly not after because of what happened, but before the zombie apocalypse, I'm sure he was perfectly fine at his job. I mean, he has his, you know, he's kind of a soothing manner, I guess. And okay, so I don't have much experience with paid clergy, but as that is his job, I'm sure he went to seminary to learn how to do all the clergy stuff that you learn to do, I guess. Again, I don't really know that much about that kind of stuff, but I'm sure he went to some sort of religious school to learn things, and probably he also learned or took some classes or was taught at least about how to counsel people and how to help them. And depending on how his church was, if it was new or whatever, I'm sure he probably knew those people better. If she had been a member of his flock previously, he probably would have known the right things to say, how to say them and when to say them and all that kind of stuff. But being as how he doesn't really know her very well, I feel like he's driven to help because I think it's part of his nature and part of what probably drove him to be a, I don't even know if he's a priest or a pastor or a minister.
He is an Episcopal priest, which is it's like the Church of England, similar kind of thing. Anglican is what they call it in Canada, but it's basically It's the religion that got started when Henry VIII decided he wanted a divorce. So it's almost Catholic, if you could put it any way. So
okay. So anyway.
But that's what he is.
All right. So I completely lost my train of thought. Anyway, probably part of what drove him to the collar, I guess, is his desire to help people. And again, he sees someone who's clearly hurting and clearly needs some help and support and what have you. It just so happens that he doesn't really know how to do that for her. So I don't know. I kind of, yes, he was awkward and sort of a goober, but I think that his intentions were good.
I think his intentions were good as well, but it's like he's got a blind spot, you know? And to answer your, or to what you were saying, like, I wouldn't call myself an expert, but, you know, I was born and raised relatively strict Catholic family, French Canadian, and, you know, went to mass every week. And I have a cousin that was a priest. He's deceased now, but, and I know he went to school for years, and then there's like a whole several years of like apprenticeship. They don't, you know, get out of school and become priests right away. They I think become, I don't know if they become deacons right away, but it's at some point they become deacons, and then eventually they're priests, and then eventually they'll get to the point where they'll have their own church. But in any case, it's just, I don't know. He's clueless. he just needs to understand that the people that he's with don't completely trust him, and it's going to be difficult for him to offer those services to a lot of the people. So
yeah, well, he's also, you know, out of practice.
That's true. What about getting back to Maggie here? What'd you think about the woman in the car?
I didn't really know exactly what to think about that. I feel like she kind of just wanted to shut that woman out, but then I don't know. I don't know why she would want to open the trunk back up to kill that woman, because clearly she wasn't going to get out of the trunk on her own anytime soon. I kind of was thinking to myself, why is this woman in the trunk? Did she do what Daryl and Beth did that one time? And then, like, I don't know, either, well, somehow died in there, like, because she got trapped and couldn't get out, or something else bad happened to her, and that's how she...
Well, she was bound and gagged.
Oh, was she? That's right, she was. Oh, yeah. All right, forget everything I just said. So clearly something untoward happened to this woman, either before the zombie apocalypse or after the zombie apocalypse started or whatever. In any case, I don't know. I didn't really know what to think, honestly.
Someone suggested on something I heard today that would make the subject of really good web series. You know how in I think they've done 3 web series in between seasons of The Walking Dead. They didn't do that this season, but like they did I think the first time they did that between seasons 1 and 2, they did one on the Bicycle Girl, explaining, you know, how the Bicycle Girl came to pass, and finding out what happened to her would be the subject of a nice little story there. But I thought that in some way, I thought maybe it reminded her of Beth. at, like, if you think about it, and we don't exactly know, but, you know, she was taken away, and I thought to myself, I don't, again, we don't know how she was in that Grady car, but I thought that, you know, they probably threw her in the trunk. So, and, you know, she had long hair and, you know, was, well, I guess all walkers are thin at this point, but she kind of looked like a Beth type. And I thought maybe that was part of it. So, but, I guess here's, the one big point when it comes to Maggie for this episode is she finally expresses to Glenn, her reactions or lack thereof, about Beth and, you know, how she acted, you know, how she kind of came to life when she found out that she was alive and, found out in the same day that she was dead. And, you know, it was good to hear her actually explain what was going on in her. I could totally understand the fact that she basically thought that she was dead or that, you know, she was going to be, she could be alive, but there was no way to know. But I thought to myself, there was one line that she said that I would have changed and it would have made that much difference. And I wrote it in the notes here. She said in the episode, she said, "I hope she was out there alive." And I added to it, "but that I'd never see her again." Like if she had just said that, to me, all the stuff that we've seen happen with Maggie kind of, you know, acting like she didn't care about Beth would have made a lot more sense. And it's implied that that's what she meant, but it just having that little piece would have made a difference to me. But I did appreciate her finally talking about it. What did you think? Although I will say you've had a lot less problems with it anyway, right?
Yeah, I acknowledge the lack, but it didn't really bother me as much as it bothered other people. So when she did finally talk about it, I kind of thought, well, I hope this makes everybody happy.
Yeah. And of course, you know, she questions whether or not she can fight it anymore. And I was actually kind of surprised that she said that. But like you said, it made total sense from the cold open. So, and we later see her help Sasha in the end. It was kind of like by that time. And, you know, when she dispatched that walker in the barn too, she worked through a lot of that stuff. So that was good to see. So what about Daryl?
Daryl, to me, you said that you thought that Sasha was taking it the hardest. I felt like it was Daryl who was taking it the hardest. And to me, he was, I think that he is clearly punishing himself for perceived wrongs that he thinks that he is or has done, or that he's responsible for these this XYZ bad thing happening or something. Anyway, I just think that he kind of, to me, he's the most sensitive in the group. He is either despite of or in spite of his past, he's the one who's the most sensitive in the group. And like Carol said, he has to feel it, and he is clearly closing himself off. He wants to be alone, and I feel like that is because he is punishing himself. And I don't really, I mean, On the one hand, I understand why he's doing that, because he feels like he's responsible. I guess he feels like he should have been able to save Beth, or maybe
he probably blames himself for allowing her to get captured in the first place.
Yeah, probably you're right. And it probably goes all the way back to that and how he was going to rescue her, and then it just didn't quite work out that way. And I understand why he is, I mean, I don't know. I kind of understand why he is doing that to himself, because there are some people who, instead of blaming the world or blaming other people for their situation and circumstances,
they blame Canada.
Because there's nothing else to do but blame Canada.
That's a South Park reference for those of you that don't know.
Oh, yeah. Now I've got that song stuck in my head. Thanks. Anyway, instead of blaming other people, they blame themselves, even if they're not responsible for it. I mean, and that can be just as destructive as blaming everyone else but yourself. I mean, there's kind of a fine line between being able to accept responsibility for the things that you've done wrong and try to, you know, make yourself better and do things differently and atone for mistakes or whatever, and then just constantly putting all of this unrealistic pressure on yourself to be this way or do this thing or whatever, in that you are pretty much setting yourself up for failure. There's nothing, I mean, you can't help but fail because you've set these unrealistic goals, I guess, for yourself. And so you're going to blame yourself, because if I had only been better, or if I had done this, or if I hadn't sent her off by herself, then she wouldn't have gotten captured. If I had been able to get to her sooner or something, you know, just any number of things that I'm sure he's probably thinking. And so I think that is probably in large part due to his upbringing. And when you are in an abusive relationship and someone else is constantly telling you that it's your fault, that you are the reason why these things are going wrong, that you are the problem, that, you know, I mean, et cetera, ad nauseum, that you kind of tend to believe that. I mean, if someone tells you something enough times, you can start to believe it, whether or not it's true or not. So I think that is why he's doing these things. I think he's punishing himself because he blames himself. And I think Carol kind of helps him. She helps him move out of his pain/guilt stage and get into the, well, I mean, I guess she would probably call it the feel it stage, but
yeah,
she encourages him to feel it. And I think that is, he is sort of able to, I don't know, it seems like they all kind of are able to move through, like move out of the stage that they've been stuck in for the majority of the episode. I think Daryl, you know, he starts crying. And so I think that is him moving out of the stage that he's been stuck in for as long as he has been, honestly. And, but
so, based on the punishing, like, do you think the cigarette burning on the hand thing was him punishing himself?
Maybe.
I didn't know what to make of that.
Well, I think that is something that his dad, I can't remember if it was dad or stepdad, in any case, the father figure in his life, I think that was something that he did to him. I feel like he said that before or something, or maybe somebody saw some scars or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that was addressed, and I don't know that I necessarily understand why, but it could be that he was trying to punish himself. It could be that maybe he was trying to make himself feel, and that was the best, quickest way to do that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There are issues with that kind of kids or people who, I guess they're kind of colloquially called cutters.
Yeah.
But I don't really understand that, to be quite honest. So I couldn't even venture to make any kind of, I just lost the word, speculation, I guess, about those kinds of behaviors. But anyway, I don't know.
I mean, he could have been numb, maybe feeling numb in some way. And
oh, I think he was in the hand. Definitely feeling numb.
Yeah. So the burning of the hand was to make him feel something. And I can't remember exactly the timing of it, but it seemed to be he started crying after that fact.
He did. Crying like directly after that. He burned himself with the cigarette and then he started crying. And maybe it was kind of like a, you know, when your heart stops, you got to give a jolt of electricity, get it jumping again.
It could have been. I only have one other thing left with Daryl, and it wasn't so much about how he was taking things, but when Carol is, talking to him, encouraging him to feel things, she gives Daryl Beth's knife, and it wasn't very clear to me, like, where did she get that from? Like, I don't think Beth had a knife in Grady, and if she had a knife, I would think that the whole, confrontation with Don would have gone a lot differently, because she could have actually stabbed her effectively instead of using stupid, needle scissors to, stab her in the,
bra strap,
chest bone or something. it just wasn't clear to me. Like, where the heck did she get the knife? I don't know.
I don't know either. I didn't really think about that, to be honest. I think if she did have it when she went to Grady, they probably took it away from her. So it's possible that maybe they got it back. But
yeah,
it doesn't seem as likely. But then again, I don't really know what else it could be, because all the stuff that Beth had on her, she dropped in the road and Daryl found it. And I don't know if he took it with him, like he took her stuff with him, or what, but I don't know where else. I mean, she could have had that on her person, I guess, but I don't know where else it would have come from, honestly.
The only thing that I could have thought of that makes sense on some level, but it also makes no sense on another, is that she picked it up when she was at Terminus and she, had all of that stuff. But it doesn't make sense because Beth was never in Terminus. So, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. And let's talk about the whole thing with Aaron. And I'm when I say the whole thing, it starts off, because I think it's a foregone conclusion at this point, that the water must have come from Aaron. I mean, where else could it have come, right?
I don't know. He did he did call himself a friend.
That's right. And the water said from a friend. But I got a kick out of Eugene saying quality assurance, because and stupid me, as soon as I heard that, because I've heard it so many times, over the last, you know, month or so. To maintain quality assurance, this call may be monitored. anyway.
That's funny.
But that made me question, though. It's like, okay. They were very reluctant to drink the water, but Eugene, you know, said, hey, you know, if this is a trap, we're already in the trap. So, you know, I mean.
Did he say that this episode? I thought that was in the scenes for next week.
Yeah, it was in this week's episode. He said that, you know, if that they were already in the trap. So his thought was to drink the water, and everybody else was, you know, didn't want to, that they couldn't trust it. But, you know, it's like I say, it's like, okay, if it had been poisoned, what would that have gotten an enemy? I mean, they could have taken care of them, you know, by other means. It just seemed like because if they were poisoned, they'd still end up becoming walkers, you know? So poisoning didn't seem like, it just didn't, I don't know. It just, of course, you can poison someone and not kill them. So, but anyway, it didn't seem likely to me. I thought that Eugene was correct, that, and thought it was good of him to, you know, sacrifice himself. Because clearly, you know, if he had been okay, everybody else could have drank and got everything. But
yeah, I don't understand why they didn't let him drink the water. If he wanted to test it, I don't understand why not. I mean, why not just let him do it? And I wasn't really thinking poison so much as I was thinking knockout juice,
yeah,
or something. But then on the flip side of that, if there were some kind of chemical in that water to produce some kind of reaction, whether or not it's death or unconsciousness, I would think that they would be able to smell it.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
I know there are some poisons that are odorless and tasteless, so.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Well, I don't have any direct experience with them.
I don't have any direct experience with them, but I do know for a fact that I can taste the difference between different bottles of water.
Oh, definitely. Yes. So we'll skip ahead a little bit since we brought up the water and get to Aaron. First of all, I guess other than Gareth, he's like the most civilized looking person we've seen in a long time. I mean, this guy looked like he had just showered and had freshly, you know, pressed shirt and, you know, I was kind of surprised especially when I saw it the second time. And I should mention that the first time, my DVR malfunctioned in a major way. I still can't figure out what happened, but it decided, even though my number one is The Walking Dead, it decided to record Dateline on ID, and it took me 24 minutes to fix it. So I really didn't watch the whole episode until 11 p.m., but anyway, so when I saw him, you know, second time, I couldn't help but notice, like, gee, this guy is like so well put together and doesn't seem to be of the apocalypse. And, you know, of course, it reminded me of Gareth, and I thought, you know, I need your shot count. But, you know, and he said goofy things like stranger danger, you know, which almost sounds like something from a comic book or something, which, well, wait a second. The Walking Dead is a comic book. So, I don't know. Good guy or bad guy? What do you think?
I think, well, it's really, there is clearly not enough information in the minute and 20 seconds that we saw of him. But without going too much into what I saw for next week, anytime someone says, you can trust me, to me, that usually means I am completely untrustworthy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why on God's green earth ever you would go up to people and, I mean, go up to people like that and tell them that you are a friend. For one thing, it can be hazardous to your health, especially when they have those big, huge guns that both of those women had, you know, and I didn't really understand it. To me, it smacks of overconfidence, and that also leads me to believe in my vast TV knowledge that something bad's going to happen. And I don't know. It seems very unlikely that they are going to come across any other friendly groups. But I don't know. I don't know what kind of bad guy he is, but I feel like he's probably a bad guy.
I think he's a good guy. And I think that there was a small symbol there with the music box to signal that he might be a good guy. But I mean, if you just think about the story, they've been, you know, first they had the governor, then they had the claimed gang, then they had Terminus, and then they had Grady, which to me wasn't as bad as some of the others, but still it was badness there. And it's been a long time. I mean, I guess maybe the last time they came across any good people in a group was Tyrese and Sasha and the rest of them that were there. And that was just a small group. So I tend to think that, you know, and before that, it was probably the farm, you know, so they're due. So that's why I'm thinking that. And it's like, really, this episode is the group hitting the bottom. You know, I said that earlier. And it's like, how much farther can you go? Okay, this is The Walking Dead, and maybe it's a bottomless pit. But I happen to think that things are going to get better. And, you know, as a result, I tend to think that he's a good guy. So.
I don't know.
And we'll see. But a couple of quick things. What did you think about the speech?
I don't know. To me, it was very, I think the most interesting part about the speech was when Daryl said that they weren't them. I was kind of thinking, what exactly does he mean by that?
We ain't them.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand why he was basically rebutting the "We Are the Walking Dead." I don't know. I mean, it was, I guess, good to hear Rick actually say the words "We Are the Walking Dead," kind of a thing, you know. But
yeah, and I know he says that in the comic book, but again, and I preface this based on some comments we got from last week, that anything I say about the comic is based on third hand stuff. I've never read the comics. I'm only can comment about the comics based on things that I've heard about the comics. So anyway, as far as I know about this speech that he does, there is a speech where he says, "We are the Walking Dead," but it's in a much different context, and the speech around it is much different. But I don't know specifics around it. But anyway, it was in the comic. But I thought it was weird in a way, his reaction, Daryl's reaction to it. But weirder than that was the way that Rick kind of reacted to him was kind of like he was consoling a little boy or something. You know, we're not them. You know, it's like, you know, it's okay, Daryl. We're not them. You can relax. You know, it just was so weird. This brings to the last thing that's worth talking about. And actually, this segues into our, we got some feedback this week.
Yay.
And, do you want to play this feedback now?
Sure.
All right. Here's, we got a couple of, speak pipe calls from Dieta. And what I ended up doing was I took her two calls, which it's the one thing about SpeakPipe is that they don't give you a long time to speak. You only have a minute and a half. So she called in twice. I was able to like take those comments that were in two segments and I kind of merged them together into one. So anyway.
Well, that's pretty much what we told them to do.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. This is Dieta. With the group. I just had some comments for the last episode. I didn't get my last comments in for the previous episode. I guess by the time I get home and think about it, I have forgot and missed the deadline. But anyway, love the show. As always, you guys are so informative. I just had a few comments about this last past episode. Just wanted to say that I thought the episode was kind of bittersweet. It was sad. You could just look and see all the pain. You know, everybody was dealing with their own issues of pain in different ways. And it was just definitely like one of the saddest episodes I've seen so far as, you know, just everybody dealing with the recent deaths. I also, you know, I'm going to watch it again, but yeah, that's definitely the vibe I got from it. I also had a question. I was trying to figure out when they were holding the, when they started off with, holding the barn door, and then I guess the walkers were trying to come to the barn. I just didn't kind of get that scene. I was trying to figure out, like, how did the walkers, what were they coming on impulse to get out of the storm? And how did they know they were in there, for one, because they weren't even in there making any noise. Oh, I don't, you know, and they had a fire, but the fire was, you know, low flame. It just seemed kind of quirky to me that you just, you know, all these walkers were outside and they were just, I guess, pushing against the door trying to get into the barn. But like I said, I just didn't understand how would they even, you know, think of that, or was that them doing it on impulse to get out of the storm? That was just one of the quirky, you know, just like really moments of the episode. Also, I guess the last part is when that guy appeared out the blue. I'm not sure what his part is in this. I know they said a new character was coming, but yeah, from the looks of the scenes, it doesn't look like it's gonna end good. So I guess we just have to wait and see how that plays out. I guess that's all I have with this episode.
That's all that we had. It kind of cut off right at the end there, but she basically made all her points. Thanks for your comments there, Dieta.
Yeah,
and
thanks.
I guess you made, you know, two points in your comments there. I totally agree about how depressing the episode was. It reminded me of The Road. Have you ever watched The Road?
I don't think so.
It is it's Viggo Mortensen is the star of it, and it's a post-apocalyptic movie. It's based on a Cormac McCarthy novel. And that is one post-apocalyptic movie. Like, I love anything that's got anything to do with the apocalypse. I don't know why, but I have not made it through that movie because it's so depressing. And this was a very depressing kind of episode, at least until the very end. So I agree with you on that point, Dieta. Do you have anything to say about that?
No.
Okay. And for the second point, now you brought up a really interesting point about the walkers and why just out of the blue they started walking towards the barn. And I hadn't really thought about it at the time, but you know, you mentioned it and it's like, you know, that is kind of odd that it would do that or they would do that. And, I had a couple of thoughts, about it. I thought of like two possibilities. One is kind of based on, I don't know, basal needs, and one is based on scent. One thought was that, you know, if they have brainstem, you know, activity, maybe part of that activity is still has them, you know, trying to go out and seek shelter. And, you know, that's possible. I mean, we saw some unusual things, like especially in the first season of The Walking Dead, like walkers turning knobs and using stones to, you know, break glass. And I remember in Guts, we had one walker scale a fence. These are not things that we see these days. So, you know, I guess it's possible that, you know, if their cruddy little brains can seek shelter, and I know that's one of the base needs, maybe it's possible they're coming out of the rain. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay. So they are driven by the need to feed, basically. And I guess depending on your views about zombies, they could be driven by the need to create more of themselves. So I don't know if they have any other kinds of needs or drives or instincts or anything like that. But on the one hand, they could recognize that depending on how powerful the rain is, like it seemed like a pretty heavy duty storm. And that kind of a storm, like that kind of rain rain here can bring down trees and leaves and all kinds of stuff. And based on the amount of decay that most of these walkers have now, it could basically, I guess, could kind of kill them, or at least render them immobile at the very least. So maybe they sense the threat to their existence. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's all I got, but I don't know why they would head to that barn.
It's kind of funny, but I mean, if you think about it, there's always been a lot of speculation about, like, what if we had them go north, and you know, how would the walkers react in the dead of winter? If that's the case, then you'd have walkers getting out of the cold. So, you know, I don't know. It's possible though. But the other thought was that because that's based, okay, so the first thing is based on them not trying to get into the barn because they were trying to, you know, feed, but them trying to get in the barn for shelter. But if they were trying to feed, it makes sense in a way if you think that walkers react much like other animals do. Like, I know my dog, Shorty, I'll watch him when I walk him. If it's raining or it has rained recently, he'll just go on a sniffy sniff parade, you know, just a whole jamboree of incredible scents that he'll just, you know, have a party sniffing around. And that always seems to be the case. Like, for whatever reason, wet conditions make things smell more. So the walkers may pick up the group's scent better in the rain. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think after the rain, it can bring out smells, but during the rain, I think it dampens smells. So, I don't know.
Well, not in Shorty.
Well, but I don't think that even if you had whatever causes them to be undead, I don't think that would sharpen your sense of smell enough because our noses are not that acute, I guess.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that's the one problem that I have with that train of thought is that I wouldn't think that zombies would suddenly be able to smell better because they're dead, you know, or undead. It doesn't make sense in that regard, but I don't know. So anything else? Oh, yeah. Did that whole walkers thing where they all piled up on the doors, I mean, did that actually happen or was that a dream? Because it almost seemed like it was a dream. I think it did happen, but you could also argue that it was a dream. What did you think?
I did not think it was a dream. I don't know why the walkers all showed up there, but the whole blocking the barn door thing to me was, I think, indicative of the desire that all of the characters have to survive, that maybe they didn't really realize it until that point, some of them anyway. But, and I liked how it brought them all together and how they kind of all, as they all, you know, went to go help out, they all kind of realized that, I guess, maybe, you know, all those little cliche things, they're stronger together. If they bring a united front, then they can accomplish their goals, you know, all that stuff. But to me, it seemed like in that moment, it really was, you know, those things weren't cliches, they were truths. And because it did take, it took all of them to hold the door closed and hold back that, I don't know, little mini purd or whatever. It didn't really seem like there were a lot. I mean, there were clearly enough to put pressure on the door, but I don't know. I honestly did not really think about what drew them to the barn in the first place until I listened to Dieta's feedback. But I thought the scene was cool enough that I guess this time it didn't really matter as much to me. Mm-hmm. But I liked it. I think it was a good moment for all of them and for all of them to realize that they really did all want to survive and that they needed each other in order to accomplish that. And that if one of them didn't try and help, then they might all fail, kind of a thing, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of, all I'll say about it is that it had this weird, and I'm still trying to figure out where this comes from, but it had this like epic struggle with the music and the way that it was shot with the cinematography, like they were all passing through some kind of event horizon, like a time travel thing. Like I keep thinking it's one of the Star Trek movies, but I don't know which one. Maybe the one with the Borg. I don't know, but just this event horizon that they pass through, and once they pass through it, everything's fine. You know, that's what the way it was presented. And of course, I didn't think they passed through some event horizon, but it was weird how it just ended with Maggie waking up.
That was kind of weird, but I thought it was kind of cool how when they went outside, they were all, I guess, taken out by some tree or something. I don't really know.
The miracle tree.
The miracle tree.
Yes.
And again, depending on the type of weather that you're used to, that could happen. I mean, a tree could come down and skewer them all. Might be a little bit far-fetched, but it could happen.
Yeah, it seemed a little far-fetched, and I don't know if it completely explained what we saw, but it was cool.
Yeah.
So how come they can't find other vehicles? I don't get it.
Well, I guess just because they're on a road doesn't mean that someone lost their car on that road.
It's so weird. It's like they're 60 miles away from D.C. and, you know, traveling from Richmond to D.C., I would think that there's stuff. Like, how do they find these completely isolated roads? I don't know. I don't know that area. I have been in D.C., but not on that side of D.C. So I don't know. Maybe there is.
I would think, depending on where you are exactly, to me it seems less likely that they have come across as many cars as they have.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that necessarily everybody in America got in their car and started to drive when this happened. I'm sure there were plenty of people who holed up in their house with their car in their garage. And I mean, the U.S. is a big place with lots of space in between stuff, depending on where you are, of course. And the further east you go, the more compact things are. But at the same time, it's not like they were in New England where you could like hit a city when you kicked a rock practically.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I had one other thing, but I don't think it's worth talking about. So what about you?
I wanted to talk about the rain.
Ah.
I thought that it was very, well, the first thing I noticed, or I should say the second time I watched it, the first thing I noticed was that the rain seemed to make everybody happy, but the three characters that we were focusing on for this episode. They all just kind of seemed like, it's raining. Great. Everybody else was thinking, we're saved! And I feel like, again, rain can be sort of cleansing. It has the idea behind it of bringing new life. And I think that that was very much what was happening to our gang. They were in a bad way. At the beginning, when Maggie asks, what does she say? How far do you think we have? Or how long do we have? Or she says, how long? And Sasha responds with 60 miles. And then Maggie says, that's not what she meant. And I kind of wondered the whole episode, what exactly did she mean? And if she meant, how long can we go without water? The answer is 3 days. Unless you're really spectacular. So to everybody else, it was basically life-saving. And to the three who didn't care about their lives, they were kind of nonplussed. And I felt like that sort of, again, reiterated the fact that those three are the three who are grieving the hardest about what's going on and their situation and all that stuff. So, but I liked that the rain came when it did. It seemed like it came at a time when they were in their They were in dire straits. It was the worst. It seemed like it was the worst that it could get because they've got this unknown water in front of them that for whatever reason they can't have Eugene test. So instead, the skies finally open up and they get some rain.
Yeah, that's good points there. I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, I could see that. I guess they weren't really taken by the rain. I guess they were in another headspace.
Well, I don't know that. I guess I wouldn't put it that way exactly so much as they just kind of, it didn't thrill them as much as it did everybody else. And that's because it's really hard to get excited about anything, I guess, when you're experiencing the kinds of emotions that they were experiencing.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the Survivor of the Week. And I didn't put anybody there because I couldn't think of anyone specifically, but what about you?
I don't know. I guess if I had to pick anybody, I would say Rick because of that narrow miss.
Ah, that's good. And I'll give it to Rick too because of not just that, but also his speech. Good. Okay, what about Death of the Week?
I guess I would say all of the walkers that got skewered by the trees.
Well, since you mentioned the thing about Rick almost getting bitten there, the scalp by Daryl Walker was good. And I didn't even pick up on this the first time, but the first time, it was part of that 24 minutes that didn't get recorded. So I had to actually see it a couple of times before I actually saw that
part. I can't believe you watched the episode without seeing it from the beginning.
I know. I just couldn't help myself. But anyway, it was either, the scalp by Daryl Walker, which after seeing it a second time, that portion a second time, I noticed that, hey, his scalp kind of moved there. And then I saw it on Talking Dead he tore his scalp completely off. So it's either that or the car trunk walker, which I kind of felt sad for. So death predictions. Do you have any?
No.
Well, originally, I thought too many to think about, but I don't know why I said that, because I think there is only one that I predict, and I think I've already predicted him. But I believe that Noah's thing about not knowing whether or not he can survive makes me think that eventually he's not going to survive. So, anyway. So Dieta left some feedback for us, but if you want to leave some feedback for us, how do you do that?
Well, it's pretty easy. You just go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback.
Yes, we want feedback. It makes the episodes that we have more interesting. And like Dieta's feedback today, I think was really great. So,
yeah, it made us think of something that we hadn't thought of before.
6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, Tuesday after the episode aired. So you have just under, I guess it's 45 hours. So just under 2 days to get us feedback. And of course, we always mention this, but iTunes reviews, we could use them. So. Yeah.
And when you're there, don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss any episodes.
Yes. Yeah, make sure to subscribe because that will, make it easier for you to get our next episode. So you can reach us in various methods that you can all find out about them. Facebook group, Twitter, go to walkingdeadtalkthrough.com and all the links will be there. We've gotten a few more, some more people over the past week, both join the Facebook group, and I've seen some new people contribute on the Facebook group. So thanks to all of you for doing that. All right. Well, this is the time of the episode where we bring up Patreon, and we understand if, you know, you can't contribute to support, you know, our podcast and all of GSM's podcasts through Patreon. But if you can, and it doesn't take much, you know, every little bit helps. So, and if you do give something via Patreon, you get some special content that you don't get otherwise. And I know we have some stuff coming up. I think I mentioned it last time. I don't know when the release time is coming for that, but should be some stuff coming for February. But we've been focusing on Barb. And Barb has another segment here where she talks about an event that she went to where she met Daryl from Golden Spiral Media and Emily from Berserker Cast. Actually, both of them are Berserker Cast. But, you know, several of the other people from the Golden Spiral Media at a Lost event. So here's that clip.
So here for the month of February, we're having some one-on-one conversations with some of our Patreon supporters. And this is a conversation that we recently had with Barb. And she and I got to meet each other in person for the Hawaii event. So she gives us her perspective on that time together. You are one of the people that I got to meet in person when we went to the Hawaii event, the Lost event, a few months ago. That's always cool when I get to meet people face to face and kind of experience some of our life together.
Yeah, that was really a lot of fun. And I think that was because I met not only you and Emily and Carrie, who were doing the Lost podcast, but then I also got to meet quite a few other Golden Spiral Media community members. And it was just such fun to see, you know, meet people in person. Again, as you said, to put the name and the face with the voice. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And we just had such a great time.
Okay, so thanks, Barb. We appreciate your support. So, closing thoughts. Do you have anything for next week?
Not really. I don't usually spend a lot of my time thinking about what's gonna happen. And especially since I haven't read the comics, I don't really know anything about the comics. So I don't really have any kind of frame of reference for what could happen. So it's pretty much wide open. Although I do think that Aaron's group is going to be bad.
Yeah, and we don't agree. So which one's going to be right? This will be interesting. I'm looking forward to next week because we kind of left it on a cliffhanger. So anyway, next episode is, and if you don't like hearing this stuff, please plug your ears. The next episode is titled The Distance. It is written by Seth Hoffman. It is directed by Larissa Kondracki. Does that look right to you?
That's the way I would say it.
The description is as follows. After withstanding a spectacular storm, Rick and the others meet what appears to be a friendly person, but find themselves mistrustful. That tells me absolutely nothing. That's basically describing the last 5 minutes of the episode.
Well, I mean, it's just telling us what we pretty much already knew.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have The Distance coming up, but until then, I'm Brian saying, go ahead, drink the water.
And I'm Ruthie saying, you're gonna make it. That's the hard part.
And this is
The Walking Dead Talk-Through.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.